Hi, I'm Darren Peppard. Welcome to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, the podcast dedicated to today's hardworking leader. Join me every Sunday for leadership insight, inspiration, and a little pep talk to keep you rolling down your road to awesome. All right, my friends, welcome into episode 132 of the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. My guest on the show today is Dr. Rachel Edo Eckett. And if you don't know Dr. Edo Eckett, I got to tell you this. Man, what an incredible human being she is. She's a wife, mother, principal, public speaker, and an author. She's been a teacher for decades, a leader in public education, and has really earned a reputation as a strong instructional leader, a passionate educational advocate, and is really a dedicated mentor. She is the principal of a top-ranked school in Maryland, a lifelong learner who strives for excellence not only for herself, but for everyone she serves. Dr. Edo Eckett has proudly served as a classroom teacher, instructional leader, mentor teacher, assistant principal, and principal. And today on the show, we're going to discuss her new book, The Principal's Journey, Navigating the Path to School Leadership. This is a book that provides helpful and practical blueprints for educators to follow as they transition into new leadership roles. And this is the time of year when many of you are looking at taking the leap, at making that next step, whether that's leaving the classroom and headed into a school leadership role, whether that's a formal role or an informal role. It could be an instructional coach position. It could be a supervisor position. It could be that AP or even principal role. And some of you are taking that next jump from the current role you're in as a leader into the next leadership challenge. And this conversation with Dr. Edo Eckett is absolutely perfect for that. She and I sat down, we talked a lot about how you navigate that, the things to be looking out for, maybe even those things to be careful of as you make your way on that journey. It's a great conversation. You're going to love it. You're going to get the whole thing right after this. Are you a school or district leader looking to unlock the full potential of your team? Do you dream of a cohesive, empowered staff all marching to the same beat? Well, then look no further. Introducing the ultimate solutions. High-performance leadership teams from Road to Awesome. Our two-day leadership retreat designed exclusively for school and district leaders like you. And picture this. A tranquil setting. Away from the hustle and bustle. Away from the email. Away from the phone calls and the constant interruptions. Over the course of two transformative days, you and your fellow leaders strategize, collaborate, and align your visions. You dive deep into discussions, workshops, and team-building activities all geared towards one common goal, unleashing the collective power of your leadership team. But this isn't just any retreat. It's a dynamic, hands-on experience crafted by experts in education and leadership development. You'll walk away with practical tools, actionable strategies, and a renewed sense of purpose to tackle any challenge that comes your way. Imagine the impact of having your entire leadership team on the same page, working effectively and efficiently towards a shared vision. With our retreat, that dream becomes a reality. So if you're ready to revolutionize your leadership approach, inspire your team, and drive real results in your school, don't miss out on this opportunity. Reach out now to start planning your two-day leadership retreat and take the first steps towards transforming your school for the better. Visit roadtoawesome.net or email me at darren@roadtoawesome.net to set up a free consultation and launch your team into a successful year. Your journey towards exceptional leadership, your journey on the road to awesome, starts right here.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
So this week on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the journey of a principal. And when I think back on my journey as a principal, when I think back on the 5 years that I spent as an assistant principal, the 11 years I spent as a classroom teacher, all of those different experiences that led up to the day that I first sat down in the office as the principal. And then, honestly, the ensuing fires that I created for a year or so before I figured out really how to do the job. I just think about, you know, what incredible experiences happened through that journey. And my guest on the show today, Dr. Rachel Edo Eckett, is the author of the book, The Principal's Journey. So we're really going to spend some time talking about principal's journeys, not mine us so much. We're going to talk about Rachel's journey. We're going to talk about just some things that maybe newer principals, aspiring principals, might want to be thinking about as we move a little closer into that point in time of the year where those jobs start to open up and people start thinking, ooh, I want to throw my name in the hat. We're going to talk about that and all kinds of other stuff. But before we do, Dr. Edo Eckett, welcome into Leaning Into Leadership.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk with you and your platform today. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited to have this conversation with you. Like in many cases, you and I have had a conversation before we even jumped on today and before we, you know, hit the record button. So I know there's a lot of really great stuff that we want to get to. And before we do that, though, let's kind of jump in the Wayback Machine and go back to maybe that beginning of your career, rewind, you know, a little bit of time back and, you know, share with our listeners, kind of paint that picture of the journey leading up to when you became a principal.
Awesome. So my journey, I smile when I think about the beginning of my teaching career. I like to look back a little bit farther. Really being a student athlete, I was an athlete from elementary school all the way up through college. I competed in college, and having the ability to connect with people and work towards common goals has always been a part of my story. And so having the opportunity to work with children and families and other teachers to help children reach their goals has always been very important to me. So I began my career as a kindergarten teacher, and I didn't have experience teaching five-year-olds, but I really grew to love that age group because seeing children make discoveries and teaching them how to read and do arithmetic, all of that process is really important to me, and doing those best practices, learning that if I make a mistake, it's okay, that I can continue to work with children and impress upon them those same lessons. So I learned a lot in kindergarten. You know, the book, Everything I learned in kindergarten, everything I needed to know. That's how I feel about kindergarten. I learned best instruction in kindergarten. I learned how to be an ambassador to my school because I was often the first teacher that the children had in elementary school, aside from their preschool experiences, if they had those. So being an ambassador to families, getting that opportunity to introduce myself to staff members as a new person and getting to know my strengths and learning other people's strengths. All that happened in kindergarten for me. And those are things that I still took up to the assistant principalship and later the principalship where I am now.
That's just amazing. I love that so much. You know, I had never thought about kindergarten, the kindergarten teacher being that ambassador, but that just makes so much sense because you're right. That is the first teacher, typically, that kids are going to have, that parents are going to experience. And, yes, you know, man, everybody who's a parent, you know, if you've had a kid that has started school, or in my case, I have one who's already graduated college, but you remember that kindergarten experience. I can still tell you who my daughter's kindergarten teacher was. And
yes,
you know, it's definitely a powerful, powerful piece. Tell me a little bit more. Let's just go a little bit deeper there with kindergarten. Was kindergarten for you the grade level you really wanted to teach when you were first hired, or was that what you were offered? And if it wasn't, what did you really think you wanted?
So my story with kindergarten is very interesting. In college at Temple University, I was early childhood and elementary certified. In my mind, I thought that I would be teaching third, fourth, or fifth graders, but my internship was in kindergarten. So I remember the day I received the paper and it said grade K. And I said, what is grade K? They said, that's kindergarten. And I said, what can kindergartners do? Do they know their names? They're like, yes, they know their names. I'm like, can they tie their shoes? Some of the kids can tie their shoes. Some of the others need to learn how to tie their shoes. So that was really my first experience with five-year-olds was during my internship. And we, at that time, were doing the assessments in the beginning of the year to see what letters children knew. Could they identify their numbers? And many of the students didn't have some of those skills yet. But what I saw every day was how quickly students, they're sponges, how quickly they could learn with really good instruction. And so Temple University is situated in the heart of North Philadelphia. So many of the schools were Title I or having, you know, higher levels of poverty. And so what I saw in this particular school was just a community around, corralling around the teachers, and the teachers really corralling around the families, having high expectations for families, making accommodations for families. What do you need? So when we would have events at the school, they always had food tied to them so that it was an extra incentive for families to come out. There was some level of childcare provided so that we really wanted the families to be there, but we wanted to make sure that they had what they needed in order to be there. That was such an important experience for me because I was a mid-year graduate. So when I came out in December and I entered my school system, I was taking over a class. And so one of the big lessons that I learned from taking over a class in the middle of the year, particularly in kindergarten, was that trust and building relationships is so foundational. So the classroom that I inherited had had two different teachers already before I got there. I was the third teacher. Yes, unfortunately, wow. I remember my story. This story was, this class was created a couple of days before the school began because of high enrollment numbers. So they started out with a substitute teacher. Then they received a full-time teacher a couple of weeks into the school year. And unfortunately, that teacher had health issues and had to resign. And then they had another sub, and then they hired me. And so I was excited about this position coming out in December, getting ready to start. January 2nd was my first day. And I'd asked my principal, can I organize a community, like a classroom meet and greet so that I could invite all of my families? And I had cookies ready and I had lemonade and I had one parent show up, one. And I introduced myself. At the time, my name was Miss Clinton. Hi, I'm Miss Clinton. I'm so excited to meet your child. And she stopped me in my tracks and she said, I don't care about any of that. You are the fourth person that my son has seen. And all I need to know is, are you going to be here for my child or not? And it really stopped me in my tracks. And I've never, ever gone into situations again without considering multiple perspectives. Because from my perspective, I was excited. I was on 100, ready to take over this class. What I had not considered was the experiences of my children in that class and the experiences of their families. And so now as I'm entering new situations and as I'm, you know, doing higher levels of leadership, I always think about what is the experience that other people are having? How can I be empathetic to that? How can I be sensitive and really try to meet their needs where they are? Now, fast forward, that same family, I have a wonderful relationship with them. Their son was amazing the rest of the school year. He has since graduated college. They still live locally. We're in contact with each other. But I will always appreciate that first interaction because it taught me the importance of being there for people. Ultimately, we have to show up for our families. We have to show up for our students. And we have to be that reliable presence for them to build that trust.
What a powerful, powerful lesson that so many educators, some of them never learn that. Some it's many years into their career. And so for you, when it very first began, but it also, I think, Rachel, what it does too, listening to that story, I'm so grateful you shared that story. It reemphasizes something you and I were talking about before we even hit the record button, the importance of relationships. And now here's this, the one parent who showed up, and hopefully she ate some cookies and drank some lemonade, but the one parent who showed up, how you still to this day have a relationship with that family.
Oh, that's, yes.
That's got to be an incredibly powerful story for you to share with teachers that you hire, teachers that you have in your school when you talk about relationships.
Yes. So I actually just hired a mid-year kindergarten teacher. And on all of my interviews, I shared the same story. How will you build that trust? Because I was in the same position and I'm here to support you, but I need your commitment. And it's a commitment that you will be here for these children because they've been through a lot and their families are expecting the best of us. And I have promised my families the best. And I'll only hire the best candidate for this because it is a unique situation. And so I'm very, very happy with the candidate that we hired because the person understood that importance. And actually, the story that I shared with you is the story that I shared on my principal interview. That is how I began talking about my story because it is such an impactful part of my career. And I talked about being an ambassador for a school and representing and being a welcoming presence for families and understanding that no matter where I'm going to be placed as a principal, at my heart, I have to remember to be empathetic to people. And I have to make sure that I'm setting families and children and staff up for success as best as I can.
It's a super powerful story. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, wearing my former superintendent hat, thinking, man, if I'm interviewing somebody and they come in with that story, how are you going to say no? You know, obviously they didn't say no because you got hired. But let's just kind of take that and go a little bit further. Let's spin that forward a little bit. You mentioned you had been an assistant principal before becoming the principal. You mentioned, yes. You know, you told that story sitting in the hot seat. So, man, that's a great story to be able to tell in the hot seat. There's a quick tip for you folks, man. Have a good story when you go sit in the hot seat. I mean, you're not going to beat Rachel's story, but have a good story when you sit down in the hot seat. That's a wonderful thing. Let's continue with kind of the principal's journey here. Let's talk about that experience transitioning out of the classroom and into that assistant principal role. We're at the point in time when this episode is going, you know, going live and people are listening to it. We're in that time of year where aspiring leaders are starting to think about or starting to look at maybe even not literally circling because we do it on the computer now, but you know, maybe screenshotting jobs that are starting to open up and they're thinking, ooh, man, this could be the one, or maybe that's one I want to go after. Talk a little bit about your journey moving from classroom into that AP role. You can go forward all the way into the principal space too, if you want to. But I just really want to take the opportunity to talk about that because it's an interesting process that I think a lot of aspiring leaders, while they're going through it, don't necessarily realize what others have gone through.
Yes. So I will be very transparent in sharing that I never considered leaving the classroom. I'm a third generation educator. My grandmother has her teaching degree. My mother has her teaching degree and I have my teaching degree. And all of us stayed in the classroom in my family for 30 years and retired. So it really was not on my radar to go into school administration. However, it was the power of a mentor that really helped me to understand that I had a skill set in leadership and that even though I was applying it well in my current role as a classroom teacher, there was more that I could be doing. And so I want to just highlight the fact that mentors are extremely important and a very important part of my story in helping me to understand what I didn't see in myself at that time was something in me that I was capable of doing. So that's really how it happened. I was selected to open two new schools in my district, which was an amazing honor to do. First, as a kindergarten teacher, in 2007, but this time in 2013 as a team leader in kindergarten. And really having that seat at that leadership table gave me the opportunity to understand more of the role of a building leader, which was something I had not seen before. And so having that first leadership experience really, I would say, was the hardest part because it was the first time as a leader on my department that I was responsible for the other teachers on my team. That was the first time I was handling parent phone calls that were not necessarily my students. It might be my colleagues' students. So all of those experiences, organizing family events with my teammates, all of those experiences really helped me to understand, wow, I see the impact that I'm having on my class of 25 kindergarten students, but what could I do in a school building in a larger scale? And so with the help of my mentors, that's when I really started to consider leadership, going back to school, getting certifications. And I'm very grateful for that entire process. I think for me, thinking about when is the right time? When's the right time to transition? How do you know when you're ready? For me, I was looking for more of a challenge. I felt that I was very capable of teaching in kindergarten. I was very competent. There's always more to learn, but I felt like I was doing very good work. But I was excited by the idea of doing more larger scale work that could impact more families. And that's when I knew it was time for me to begin my transition. And what happened was I ended up being out of the classroom more and more and into more leadership things within my district. So at that time, I was serving on policy committees. I was consulting with district leaders on different ideas. And so I found myself farther and farther away from the classroom. And that was sort of my cue that now was the time to apply for the assistant principalship. And so I applied, I practiced for the interview, I continued to gain as many leadership experiences as I could, and I was promoted that summer into my school where I currently am as an assistant principal. And I will tell you, that transition into the assistant principalship was major. Remember, I'm coming out of kindergarten, so I'm a little bit limited in my scope of some of the systems. I knew the importance of relationships. I'm always a relationship person. I knew the people part, but I didn't understand some of the dynamics between people. I didn't understand how one piece connected to the other, and if one piece fell, how that impacted other things. That takes time to learn. I made a lot of mistakes my first couple years, often moving too fast. I would hear something that made sense to me at that moment. Sure, great, let's go. And then 10 minutes later, someone would say, did you just say they could do that? Because did you think about this? Oh, no, I didn't. So I think when you are a new leader in a large system, you start to understand, okay, I need to slow down. I need to consult. I need to use the strengths of the people around me. Don't do anything by yourselves. Those were all lessons that helped me grow and develop as a leader. And thank goodness for grace, because if you have relationships with people, they will give you grace when you make those mistakes. They just need to know that you are working to improve. So that's been a part of my story too, just having an attitude of what critical feedback can you give me and how can I make it better? How can I improve? I think if you come from that stance, people will appreciate your leadership.
Man, so much good stuff in there. So much good stuff in there. I want to go back to something that you said. And again, with the thought being for especially the aspiring leaders or maybe somebody who's looking to leap from one role to the next, AP to principal, principal to district level, something like that. You talked about taking on more and more leadership responsibilities prior to leaving the classroom, you know, being on things like policy committee, being, you know, involved in all those different things. And I think this is just such a critical, critical thing. You know, sometimes aspiring leaders will go and they'll get their credentials, they get their master's degree, those types of things, but maybe haven't thought through the, hey, what if I take on other leadership responsibilities? You by talking about that, you made me reflect on a handful of aspiring leaders that I worked with over the course of my career that struggled to get the opportunity to land in an assistant principalship. And so much of it was, you know, even with giving them the advice, you need to get involved, you know, try and get on policy committee, calendar committee, try and get on the salary negotiations committee, something that will give you principals advisory group, something that will give you that view, that little bit of a peek into what you just talked about. Because until you go do it, you're not going to really see how all the pieces come together. But when you get involved in some of those different groups and some of those different committees, you'll find, at least most likely, I'm sure obviously you did, you'll find those people who will mentor you, who will guide you, who will give you some insights. And those things show up when you're at the interview table. Yes, the great story helps. But those things make a difference when you're at that interview table. Maybe just talk a little bit more about some of that experience.
Yeah, I'm glad you circled back to that, because I don't talk about it enough. But when I'm mentoring people now, the analogy I use is, you might be a big fish in a little pond at your school, right? You might be your go-to person. Everybody knows, okay, Darren's going to be my go-to person for technology or for this skill set. That's great. But does the rest of the district know who you are? Does the rest of the district, can other people speak on your work? And if nobody can speak on you or your work, then you need to expand your leadership outside of your building. So I agree. I think going on policy committees, anything that you can do, running, programming within your school, all of those things are important for two reasons. One, you're getting leadership experience, you're putting it in your back pocket. Okay, that was a challenge. I figured it out, going in my back pocket. But most important is the relationships. A lot of the people that are on those policy committees are decision makers. They might be sitting on your panel. So another thing, everything is an interview. Everything is an interview. That's yes. Really important. I talk about that.
Oh my gosh. Say it one more time. Say it one more time.
Everything is an interview. It's in my book. Everyone is always looking. As a leader, all eyes are on you. And if you're not in a leadership position yet, people are still watching you. They want to see if you're dozing off at the meeting. They want to see if you're multitasking when you should be paying attention. All of those things come together because, again, you're going to see these people on your panel. They're going to be making decisions for you and on your behalf. And so the way you dress, the way that you speak, the way that you show up, the way that you listen, the way you respond when you don't get what you want, people will watch and they will remember. So it's very important to remember, in the role of a principal, AP, any leadership, you're on 100% of the time. You're on. You have to be on. Is it a different level of pressure? Yes, absolutely. Is it a pressure you have to learn? Yes. So it's not going anywhere. That's a part of the job. And so as you ascend to each level of leadership that you're going higher and higher, everything is an interview. Remember that. Build your relationship. Put your best foot forward at all times. All times. That also includes social media. Watch what you're saying and doing on social media. All of those things are a part of your brand. They're a part of the way that you are packaging yourself. And so leaders have to be very, very careful about what we're saying and what we're doing, because everyone is watching you. They want to see what you're doing.
Welcome to the Aspire Leaders Masterclass. I mean, that's like a masterclass that you just taught. And so let's just do this then. So you mentioned it. You said that that's in the book.
Yes.
One, tell me what inspired you to write a book. I'm always curious, you know, as somebody who's written books, is continuing to write books. I'm always curious about why somebody chose, you know, what inspired them to do that. And then you've already laid out some gold from that book. Let's talk a little bit more about what's in there.
Sure. So I wanted to write the book for many years. In my mind, I've always wanted to be an author. And leadership is something that is so important to me. It's been a part of my life. I mentioned I was a student athlete and how that informed some of my leadership. But what I really realized was, every time when I talk with aspiring leaders, be it sometimes I was teaching a class for a college professor, people would ask me, how do you do it? It wasn't about what to do, because when you read any leadership book, most of those are from the assumption you're already in the position. Well, my book is, how do you get there? It's not all about what you do when you get there. It's the how. And so I just continued. People would continue to ask me, Rachel, I love what you're doing. I see what you're doing. How do I do it? And so I really wanted to spend some time to put as much knowledge as I've learned from my mentors, from leaders that I admire, all in one place. So the book, The Principal's Journey, Navigating the Path to School Leadership, is truly about, how do you get from point A to point B? So the first thing I talk about in the first chapter are, what are the rewards and challenges of being a school-based leader? Because I think it's important, if you want to do it, you should have an understanding of what are the challenges so that you can reflect and say, is this something I want to do? That's number one. What are the rewards? The rewards are wonderful, but we know that there's also challenges. So I want to be upfront about what are the rewards and challenges. And then I talk about getting a mentor. Mentoring is really important, as I shared in my story. I would not be sitting in the principal seat if my former principal hadn't said to me, Rachel, I can see you running a building one day, and I think it's going to be soon. Never had I ever thought, but that was a life-changing conversation that I can pinpoint exactly where I was when she said it and what we were doing.
Yeah.
And she just had that belief. And so I talk about you've got to secure a mentor. I give you ways to do it, questions to ask. How do you find a mentor? How do you know the qualities of a great mentor? And then I talk about the interview process. I give you interview questions to consider. I talk about what leadership experiences would be helpful. Darren, you mentioned already, we talk about policy, joining those things, connecting with other leaders. All that is a really important part of the process. I talk about covers, resume letter, how to get all of your materials together. And then I talk about what do you do when you're there? How do you set a vision? How do you build that positive culture? How do you handle hard conversations? Because as leaders, hard conversations are a part of our job, and we have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable and having some of those conversations. I talk about a work-life balance. It's so important that as leaders, we are able to come to work every day with as much energy as we can. And the only way we can do that is if we're preserving ourselves and taking time out for our friends and our family. So that's also an important component that I wanted to make sure that I give very specific strategies of things that have helped me in my career. Now I'm in my 9th year as an administrator. I've done 4 years as an assistant principal. Now in my 5th year as a principal, I felt that I have some knowledge that I can share that was shared with me. And so my hope is that after reading the story, reading the book, number one, people walk away with a plan of action. So after each chapter, I provide chances for reflection questions. And I ask some hard questions because part of being a leader is we have to be reflective. But in the last part of the book, it's about making a plan. What are my next leadership steps to get me where I want to be? So that's really important to me. And it becomes almost like a diary. You can then over time see how you are growing as a leader. And I'm still hearing from people now who have said, I read the book and I got a promotion. I love that. That makes me really happy. I'm seeing some of my colleagues getting promotions. And so I feel that this is my contribution to the field of education and to the leadership field.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. Folks, we'll have in the show notes, you'll see a link to Rachel's website, and right on that website is where you can go and grab a copy of that book. We've reached that point in the show, Rachel, that I ask a question of everybody who's here on the podcast. So it's your turn to take the Leaning Into Leadership hot seat. Not quite the same as, you know, the interview hot seat, but nonetheless, the hot seat. So yeah. It's the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. So, Rachel, how are you leaning into leadership right now?
Right now, I'm leaning into leadership by mentoring 3 aspiring leaders. And I'm just so grateful and blessed for that opportunity. I have 3 wonderful up-and-coming leaders that I'm mentoring, Laura and Amber. And so it's been a wonderful, and Whitney, it's been a wonderful opportunity really to reflect on what I'm doing, to have them shadow and just talking through leadership and next steps and how can we impact as many people positively as we can. That's really my goal. How many people can I positively impact? Who can I help move forward and make a meaningful impact in their life? So I'm really leaning into mentoring because it was a gift that was given to me that I believe very strongly in, and helping to mentor the next set of leaders, because we all know the principal pipeline, the assistant principal, the teacher pipeline is really low. And so it's important that we talk about how we can do our jobs well so that people want to do this role. This is a great position. It's a great role. It has its challenges, but the impact that we can make makes up for those challenges. So I really want to help bring more leaders into the field.
I love it. I think that's fantastic. So people are going to want to get in touch with you. So Rachel, how do they do that?
So I am on Twitter at Rachel Edowekit, my name just spelled out. I'm also on Instagram at The Principal's Journey. I'm on YouTube, which is my name, at Rachel Edowekit, and LinkedIn, Rachel Edowekit. So if you see another Rachel Edowekit, it's probably not another one. It's me. So I'm really looking forward to connecting with as many of you as I can.
Outstanding stuff. Thank you so much, Rachel, for being here on the Leaning Into Leadership podcast. This was a blast.
Thank you so much, Darren. I really appreciate it.
Man, just some absolute leadership gold there from Rachel Edowekit. I really appreciate her coming on the show. Folks, I've put all of her contact information in the show notes. Make sure you go and check those out. Make sure you get connected with her. There's also a link to go check out her book, The Principal's Journey. And now it's time for a pep talk. All right. So, folks, this is the time of year when, as leaders, our focus begins to get divided. We are thinking about getting the rest of the year completed. We're thinking about all those other pieces, right? Testing season, hiring season, evaluation season, budget season. I don't know why we call all of them seasons, but we do, right? All of those things are happening, but it's also planning season, right? We're thinking about next year. We're thinking about how we want to start our year. We're thinking about the goals we have. We're thinking about a retreat with Roe Dawson is what we're thinking about, right? You should be, right? But that's not what I want to talk about right now. I want to focus on now. I realize that you're going to be split in your thinking, and you should be, but really keep your focus on the here and the now, right? I mean, if you think about it, the number one thing, again, is about teaching and learning. It's about making an impact on the life of kids, and we can't pass up the teachable moments we have in front of us right now. The opportunities to continue to grow our staff right now, simply because we're thinking about what's happening down the road. Yes, you need to do it. Yes, you will do it. But folks, right now, don't ease up on the throttle. Keep that throttle pushed forward. Keep your expectations high. Keep your presence high. Folks, more than any other time of the year, right now, your staff and your students need to see you in their classrooms. They need to see you in the hallways. They need to see you in front of the school. It can be easy to get stuck in your office with all those post conferences and all that other stuff. And you need to do those, but make sure that you're intentional with your calendar. Make sure you're intentional with your time. Make sure you're intentional with your communication so that you continue to hold those high expectations, to hold fast to those things that you truly value, that truly matter in your school, that are part of that compelling vision you have for your school in the long term. Continue to keep your foot on the throttle, folks. Man, that's what it's all about right there. Get out there and make a difference with your people. Get out there and love on them. Continue to take advantage of every single one of those teachable moments that you have. And get out there and have a Road to Awesome week. Thank you for listening to the Leaning Into Leadership podcast, brought to you by Road to Awesome. Don't forget, click subscribe, give a review, and share this with somebody who might also enjoy leaning into leadership.